In October 1994, I had attended a presbytery gathering. That's where the ministers all get together to talk over church matters. And at that presbytery meeting, the whole issue of how land was taken from the Ahouses' people was basically covered up and denied by the church. So I took issue with that, and I wrote this letter. Subsequently, I was fired from my pulpit. The letter is dated October 17, 1994, and it's addressed to the members of Comox Nanaimo Presbytery. Dear members of Presbytery, I am writing this in the wake of the brief discussion at the Fall Presbytery Gathering in Gold River concerning the issue of the Ahouses' land settlement. I am both deeply concerned about the response of Presbytery officials to this issue and the way in which this matter was dealt with at Presbytery. My perspective on this issue arises largely as a result of long and fruitful discussions with the Ahouses, including with several tribal elders. The issue seems to be one of violated trust on our part, rather than any legalistic or documentary problem, as Presbytery officials have suggested. In a nutshell, native land was given to the Presbyterian and then United Church solely for the education and spiritual upkeep of the Ahouses, in particular the young people. This land was subsequently sold by the church to a private white individual. Simple justice and decency requires that our church rectify our wrong by seeking the return of the said land to the Ahouses and by publicly admitting our mistake. This issue has been clouded over by our presbytery. Some officials have claimed that the Ahouses have created roadblocks to meeting or cannot produce appropriate legal documentation to show ownership of the land by the Ahouses. Sadly, these are precisely the words and accusations that a colonial system has directed against indigenous peoples ever since we took away their land. The very fact that we are waiting for the Ahouses to prove their case to us or to meet with us on our terms reveals at best an insensitivity on the part of our church to God's call for justice towards those we have wronged. At worst, it indicates a perpetuation of the racist and oppressive relationship that has been our legacy regarding indigenous peoples. It is not too late to reverse this legacy or the wrong we committed in regards to the Ahouses' land issue. Indeed, it is imperative that we do so soon if we are concerned at all about our credibility and integrity in the eyes of both the indigenous peoples here and the wider public. If we do not clearly and publicly admit our wrong on this matter and seek actively to return the land in question to the Ahouses' people, I'll find it difficult to associate myself with the United Church on this issue. I urge Presbytery officials to meet immediately with the Ahouset elders on their terms and come to a mutually agreed resolution to this matter that upholds our paper position of supporting native land claims. Anything short of this will expose a dangerous gap between our words and our actions. Yours in Christ, Reverend Kevin McNamee-Annett. Oh, the fact that I was fired for pointing out that the church was selling off native land to its corporate buddy, the big logging company, McMillan Bloedel, the fact that I wrote about that and was turfed so quickly out of the church is proof right there that, you know, the Achilles heel here is the issue of the land. How was it gotten? When you look into the mechanics of how the land was taken, it's out and out murder, mass murder.
That's exactly what I feel, that there was genocide. The control was taken over when our people started to die through the smallpox, and that was, we believe, was deliberately spread in our community.
Smallpox was one of the most communicable diseases in human history and was responsible for the deaths of untold millions of indigenous people around the world, even after a vaccine for this disease was discovered in England in the 18th century. In reality, smallpox was a chief weapon in the deliberate germ warfare waged by European powers against native peoples because of its brutal efficiency. Within 10 days of contracting the disease, the victim was dead.
I'm a descendant of Samson Piel. Samson Piel was the original family that were here. And the Samson and his brothers and his sister were the last left when they came back after fishing and working wherever. They got back, all the family were dead from the smallpox epidemic. And they were floating all around the beach here and somewhere up in the, by the creek over there. And they had to bury them all.
There's been a study of a general called Geoffrey Amherst, and Amherst, Nova Scotia, is named after him. He was a British general who conducted germ warfare against the Mi'kmaq
Indians in Nova Scotia. And in the 1740s, he kept a journal of this. And he was so brazen, he didn't hesitate to record what he was doing in the journal. Again, because they didn't figure they'd ever have to answer to anybody, since they were the law. And in it, he describes how they would go into hospitals where their own people had been dying of smallpox. And they took the blankets, and he gave it to one of his subordinates, a major, who then took it out among the Mi'kmaq and the other Indians who were allied with the French, like the Huron and the Algonquin-speaking Indians in the eastern part of Canada. They were targeted. In fact, most of the Huron were exterminated by smallpox. So they were openly admitting that they were doing this. And all up and down Vancouver Island, you have, you know, stories of the same thing happening, although happening through the missionaries primarily, because they were the first ones into the area. Harriet describes in her village a little place called Cloos near Port Renfrew on the west side of Vancouver Island. She says in the 1860s, there was 3,400 people there. By the 1890s, there were 44. So it had gone from over 3,000 people down to 40-some-odd people. 98.5% of the population gone. And that was mostly from smallpox. And their people say that missionaries and British sailors had been dropping off these blankets to them that were laced with smallpox, and that's how so many people died. You don't get that many people dying, you know, kind of accidentally. Somebody caught a cold one day. I mean, that isn't the way those things happen. It was germ warfare.
Tuberculosis was another weapon in the arsenal of germ warfare used against Native people in Canada. A fiercely communicable disease, spread quickly by air and contaminated food, tuberculosis was responsible for many of the deaths of children in Indian residential schools across Canada. According to government officials like Dr. Peter Bryce, residential school staff deliberately and regularly exposed healthy Indian children to tuberculosis by forcing them to sleep and play alongside children dying of the disease, and then denying them aid or treatment. It was this murderous practice that was responsible for an annual death rate in the residential schools of nearly 50%.
We're in the same room with people who had TB. They didn't separate us.
Then we were forced to play with them. The nuns made us play with those kids. We didn't want to get sick either, but they were forcing us to play with those kids. And also, they made some of them sleep with the other kids too.
The interesting thing was at the University of British Columbia, where I began to study for a doctoral degree, I began to find these records from a report by a guy called Dr. Peter Bryce, who, he was head medical officer for Indian Affairs. And in 1907, he went on a tour of all the schools out here, like on the coast and in the prairies. And he found that, he claims that over half the children were dying every year from tuberculosis. And specifically from a practice whereby healthy children were brought in and housed alongside children dying of tuberculosis. And then none of them were treated or helped in any way. They were left to die of this communicable disease.
Why?
Because they wanted to kill off at least half the children and want to cull the numbers down. And Dr. Bryce, who, I mean, this is not some flaming radical. He's an establishment doctor who's reporting back to his boss, the Duncan Campbell Scott, who is head of Indian Affairs. And he said in his report, the quote is, "I believe that conditions are being deliberately created to spread infectious diseases." So he was clear. Children were being deliberately murdered by a practice of contaminating them with TB. That practice was referred to consistently. It's now even talked about in some of the mainstream academic books about the residential schools. So it's gradually been accepted, although it was reported on the front page of the Ottawa Citizen as far back as 1907. This is from Schools Aid White Plague. This is a discussion of Dr. Bryce's report. It's from November 15th, 1907. About 100 years ago, they said the average death in the residential schools in the West was 69%. So over two-thirds of the kids die after 1 year in these schools. That's talked about in the mainstream press. And yet today, so many people are acting like, oh, we didn't know this. Well, I mean, it's been public knowledge for a century in Canada.
Dug them down.